Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little boy named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. Thanks for supporting us for the past 100 episodes. Don't forget to subscribe and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page, where you can find out how you can join us for our monthly patron webinar, where we do a deeper dive discussion about all things perimenopause.
The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast. Today, it's myself, Dr. Tony, and Dr. Lisa, and we are following up on our last episode around what is perimenopause. We went through a lot of the different things to look at when it comes to perimenopause. And today we're going to go through some of the brief synopsis of research around there. The little research that there is on women in perimenopause to really look at, you know, what is research telling us about a treatment? What are some of the things that we look at when it comes to helping to support our patients who are perimenopausal women coming to see us? And this, again, can be a little tricky, because sometimes we'll have women come to see us where they're thrown off because their menstrual cycles are not regular anymore. And we really need to kind of talk to women about really what goals of treatment around perimenopause actually are, right, Lisa?
Mm-hmm. Definitely, because a lot of women, you know, expect to go back to a regular cycle, like a regular cycle, not irregular, and not have any symptoms at all. But we do need to recognize this is a transition period, and our hormones are going to be up and down. The goal is to manage our quality of life and support the symptoms that are coming up. And then we also want to look at, as our hormones are changing and as they're declining, you know, we do have increased risk of disease, like increased risk of osteoporosis, heart disease, dementia. So we also want to look at ways to help reduce that risk as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is where something to kind of consider with perimenopause being this transition in hormones and these fluctuations of our hormones. You know, just in looking even at, you know, what is realistic in terms of treating perimenopause and supporting yourself while you're going through perimenopause. I mean, you can kind of think about the same kind of hormone fluctuations that you're experiencing as, you know, you were experiencing in puberty, or your kids experience going through puberty. And we can't necessarily expect, you know, kids going through puberty to not have any symptoms and have a completely smooth ride through. But again, there are different lifestyle things that you can do, and different nutrients that you can really think about to support your health overall and to look at smoothing out some of that, those hormone fluctuations, so that you're not impacted as severely. Lisa, maybe we can even start, before we jump into the research, just kind of talking about what works for us as perimenopausal mamas going through this time.
Yeah, definitely. I think, that we definitely want to have grace with ourselves, right? Like you mentioned, with people going through puberty, you know, a guy starts talking and their voice changes and it shocks them. You know, as perimenopausal women, these things are going to come up where there's going to be more challenging times, times that we seem to be sailing through with no symptoms, but just, you know, anticipating that there's going to be ups and downs, and then finding ways to work through that and even accept some of the changes can be challenging. But we're going to give you some ideas on things that may help with the transition and help reduce some of the symptoms that can impair your quality of life. I think for yourself and your practice, Tony, or for your practice and my itself in my practice, I know body composition, weight changes is a big concern in perimenopause. Women are like, what is happening to my body? Like, yes, there's been changes after having kids, but it's like, wait a minute, I have some back fat, or wait a minute, what's happening around my abdominal area? So body composition changes are real, because we do know that with our fluctuating estrogen, right? We actually are more hungry. Estrogen itself, I didn't realize this, but it actually can help us to like signal those hunger or those satiety signals so that our body is like satisfied and full. And what happens right before you get your period, your estrogen drops and you're insatiable, right? Your appetite is insatiable. You just want to eat everything in the pantry or everything in the fridge. So yes, there probably are hormonal influences we know that increase that weight gain or change in body composition, not only with estrogen, but with cortisol being high, with thyroid underfunctioning. But a lot of women don't realize as we get older, and Andrea mentioned this in a previous episode, Andrea Prue, that we actually become more carbohydrate resistant. So when we eat carbohydrates, we release more insulin in response to that, even if we're not diabetic or pre-diabetic. And insulin is our fat storing hormone. So we can't process carbohydrates as well as we once did. And that includes breads, pastas, rice, grains, fruit. You know, it's not saying cut all those out, but we'll talk about what kind of nutrition you want to look at as you're transitioning in perimenopause, but you want to be aware about that. And a lot of women aren't getting enough protein, because we actually can have what's called sarcopenia. It sounds scary, right, Tony?
Yeah, it sounds like a disease that I do not want.
I know.
Actually, it is something I don't want. I don't want to be kind of wasting away and have a really low muscle mass happening as I get older.
I agree.
So there's that piece of really using that protein to build your muscle mass and maintain that lean muscle mass as we age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause for me, so supporting my body composition, maintaining muscle mass, you know, I did talk about how I did intermittent fasting, but then I calculated how much protein I was getting in a day, and I wasn't able to get enough because I wasn't eating breakfast or until about noon. So I changed up how I was eating, and now I'm really tracking my protein. You know, we want to aim for 1.2 to 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of your body weight. And even tracking it for a day, 2 days, 3 days in MyFitnessPal can give you an idea, because that sarcopenia is the muscle wasting, and you need protein to maintain that muscle mass and maintain your metabolism, which is also going to help your bone health. But also with my body composition, getting in the protein, not intermittent fasting, and then getting in creatine, which we'll talk a little bit more about on a daily basis, it helps me to maintain and build a bit more muscle. It helps me recover quicker between workouts. And we know it has added benefits, which we'll get into as well. And then one more big benefit of, or one thing that really helped with my body composition, is not pushing it every day and pushing it 100%, right? Recognizing when your body needs to rest, and during your menstrual cycle, you know, when you have your period, maybe you need to just do walking that day or gentle yoga, because we can throw off our cortisol levels and that can contribute to weight gain as well. So I find those were the kind of the trifecta, the protein, the creatine, and really listening to my body and having rest days when I need them. But what about you, Tony?
I found really the huge piece was around blood sugar, Lisa. And again, that was really interesting information, because I didn't realize that link between estrogen and our hunger and satiety hormones either. And it completely makes sense, because, I mean, there's that, plus going through a pandemic, plus having a sweet tooth like I do, I will have a tendency to reach for more sweets. And I found that really being mindful of my intake of sugars and sweets and simple carbs, as well as really supporting my digestive system and my gut health. And we've definitely talked about that in past episodes, and we'll link in the show notes to past episodes on gut health. I found that that was huge when it came to my body composition, especially around the middle, especially around my abdomen. So I found, with really paying attention to that and being more mindful of that, I absolutely noticed a difference. And of course, making sure that I'm moving. I really love to get outside and do walks. And this is where kind of pushing myself sometimes a little bit more and providing a little bit more variety. I'm not just doing a stroll around the neighborhood. I'm going to specifically to some really intense hills in my neighborhood to again, push myself, push my heart rate, push my muscles a little bit more. And of course, I'm always up for rest days as well, Lisa.
I know, who isn't, right? Bring on the rest days. And I've been geeking out because I actually got a continuous glucose monitor. So I'm on day 12 of 14. It's actually attached to my arm and I sync it up to my phone and I can check my blood sugar regularly. So I've been fascinated by what changes my blood sugar. So definitely not getting enough sleep or a good night's sleep. My sugars are a bit higher. I'm still in the normal range, but they're higher compared to if I get a good sleep. Having things like even a little bit of popcorn, and I'm trying to do, you know, in quotes, healthier popcorn, like the lesser evil popcorn with coconut oil. I see a spike after that. It's still in the normal range, but that's kind of what gets it up the highest. So these grains, these, you know, things that we don't necessarily think of being sugar can still increase our blood sugar levels. So I'm finding it so fascinating just to track it. And I think I'm going to miss it when it's not there, but I do feel like the bionic woman with this thing stuck in my arm and I bring up my phone and it kind of beeps when it takes the reading. So
oh, I need to try that, Lisa. That is such interesting information to have, and definitely another tool that's being used more and more to really see, okay, how are you reacting to the foods that you're eating?
Exactly. Even the combination of foods, right? Like what's in your meal? Is there enough protein? Is there enough fat? So I definitely recommend everybody test that out. And then other symptoms we see a lot of women complain about is the sleep piece, right? Whether they wake up in the middle of the night and they can't stop thinking and they can't fall back asleep, or they're getting hot flashes. So what I found to be really beneficial is definitely supporting our circadian rhythm and seeing light in the morning, whether it's, you know, a 5-10 minute walk within the first few hours of waking or using a light box. I find melatonin, I take that before bed. That really helps me to sleep and dimming the lights and using blue blocker glasses. And I need to turn my brain off. Like I know my husband, he loves stimulating TV shows at night. And I used to do the whole like Homeland and, you know, Ray Donovan. But now I know I can't watch those shows because I'm going to be wired. I'm not going to be able to fall asleep. So I have to watch like the Great Canadian Baking Show, or we're watching something called MKR, My Kitchen Rules, which is like a cooking competition on Amazon Prime. I need something that's just going to help my brain turn off. And then I do like some passion flower, GABA, if needed to support sleep. But what's been helpful for you, Tony?
Yeah, definitely watching what my screen use is in the evening is really important. And, you know, I'm a big fan of dimming the lights before bed, doing some reading like from a real book and not a screen before bed is really key. And, you know, absolutely, especially because of the pandemic, I do find that I'm really often using more of those relaxing supplements at night. I've always been a big fan of magnesium in the evening. Again, you can listen to more about my obsession with magnesium in our magnesium episode.
It's understandable. It's a great mineral.
It's such a wonderful natural muscle relaxant and nervous system relaxant, just great for helping to wind down at the end of the day and really help to support sleep. But I'll often use a supplement with, 5-HTP, ashwagandha, even phosphatidylserine, Relora. Has a a magnolia extract, and that can be really, again, supportive to really help that wind down process so that I'm not too stimulated and that melatonin can kick in for sleep.
I love that. Yeah, Relora I find is great too. And I cycle that in when needed. And then for the hot flashes, Tony, right? That can be interfering sleep, but people can not only get them in the nighttime, they might be getting them in the day. So I love, you know, or turning down the heat, not wearing much clothing to bed and using the Zonli weighted blanket, which has glass beads. So it's like relaxes your system because it weighs 15 pounds, but it's cooling. It keeps you warm, but the heat can be dissipated through through that, and then not eating too close to bedtime, because that raises your body temperature. If you have food close to bed or spicy food or even alcohol, that does increase your body temperature, and then you're going to feel warmer and have more, you know, hot flashes. But people can pinpoint their triggers for hot flashes even in the day, right? Sometimes after having a hot tea or a hot coffee, they're like, oh, here comes that hot flash. So it's really listening to your body with that. And then I do use a progesterone cream. So some patients and myself notice a benefit with a reduction in hot flashes, and it's supporting sleep. You know, oral progesterone can be really beneficial too. And then sometimes people may need some topical estrogen, bioidentical estrogen, as they're getting into the late perimenopause and their cycles are pretty spread out or irregular, to help with the hot flashes too.
Yeah. And again, it'll be really wonderful once we get more research done on the use of progesterone for hot flashes and those vasomotor symptoms in perimenopause. Something that I've also really played around with, not only for myself, but also really helped to support my patients with, is to look at using the amino acid glycine. That has been shown for a number of people to help that reduction of heat, both during the day and night. And I found myself for hot flashes, I just kind of found this almost by accident, that for me, using an antioxidant combo is really key. The antioxidant combo that I am using personally has grapeseed extract, which for, you know, a number of different clinicians out there, they've found that that can be helpful for women in terms of reducing hot flashes. I use a combo of that with, other antioxidants, alpha-lipoic acid, CoQ10, resveratrol, all of those great nutrients that kind of reduces the damage in our bodies. That combo that I've been taking, I found that I was using it to really help to support my brain function, helped to reduce oxidative stress and, you know, free radical damage in my body. And I found that once I, you know, finished my bottle and switched to a different combination that didn't have some of those antioxidants in it, my hot flashes came back. And then once I restarted it, my hot flashes went away. So it's like, okay, I'm just going to listen to my body, continue to take these nutrients and not have to deal with hot flashes at night or during the day.
That's so fascinating. Yeah, it's just reinforcing, right? It's not a one size fits all. There's so many options out there, and you want to discuss these with your practitioner. And, you know, there is some trial and error, if you will, but there are guidelines, yes, and things you can follow, right? It's not like we're pulling things out of thin air, but just like we talked about with what's going on with your hormones, they're all over the place, right? So what you need at one point in perimenopause may be different than something you need later on. So just recognize that. If it's working for you, great, but it may not be what you need 6 months down the road.
That's a really important point, Lisa. And also what can really impact hot flashes and other symptoms like that is, you know, stress in our life, our mood, what's on our plate, and if we are feeling overwhelmed or stressed out with the number of different things that we have on the go in our lives. So that's where, again, that's a real key piece when it comes to perimenopause, because that can be a time with the hormone fluctuations that can impact how you may be experiencing depression or anxiety or even burnout overall too. I definitely find that really giving myself some time, getting outside, having some play, really is key for my mood, as well as keeping up certain nutrients. For me, I definitely have a feeling that vitamin D has been really crucial in supporting my mood. Back in our vitamin D episode, I shared that my vitamin D was low, surprisingly, but not surprisingly, because I wasn't mindful about really supplementing with my vitamin D, especially over the winter. So I've really found that with boosting that up, mood is definitely better for me, as well as using something like 5-HTP. But also really looking at like what is on my plate, and and not feeling like I have to do it all in life. Not so doing some delegating, having someone to come and help to clean the house, or you know, helping me with you know, my bookkeeping, or those kind of things. That is really important, as well as really making sure I'm having really good nutrient dense food, having important conversations with family and friends, with my partner, to really make sure that, you know, nothing is unsaid and there's no unspoken things that are maybe in my mind creating upsets or resentments or anything like that. So, and absolutely having some me time, doing my own personal development. You know, I've talked about even doing something that I've really kept up with is over the pandemic, is doing landmark seminars that really just help me, again, manage some of those stresses and some of those, you know, thoughts that roll around in my mind, and just really getting clear on that.
Yeah, I think those are really important to recognize. Yeah, that communication, fitting into your life, things that spark joy. And I interviewed Leanne Kim, and she talked about, you know, the Marie Kondo method of when you go through your closet, if it sparks joy, you keep it. If it doesn't, you get rid of it. But do we do that with things in our schedule, right? Like, do I want to make a gingerbread house? You know, this is something for holiday reference, for example, or is it something that I feel I have to do because I do it every year, right? Or do I want to have that holiday get together with so-and-so? So asking yourself, does it spark joy? And do I want to do it or not? And then making a decision around that. And my new, you know, newer philosophy since being a mom is like, good enough, keep it simple, right? It doesn't have to be perfect. Whereas before I'm like, oh, for Christmas, you know, we have to have the great decorations up. We have to have all the Christmas lights. It's like, no, let's just do what we can and celebrate that. And it doesn't have to be this certain way that I have in my mind just because that's what I've always done, right? So I think that's really key. And then in terms of supplements, yeah, definitely omega-3 I find makes a big difference. And we'll talk about some studies around that. We know there's the gut-brain link. So keeping my gut in check with eating a diet appropriate for my body and taking probiotics can be key. And also I've shared my journey with my thyroid health, and taking a desiccated thyroid to optimize my thyroid function has really improved my mood and helped with my energy levels too. And then we have hired back our cleaner. Woo, woo. So Yay. We hadn't had them through the pandemic. I felt bad. The first time they came back, it was not a disaster, but you know, there's dust hiding in all these places that was regularly clean. Like, we still cleaned, but obviously they do a deep clean. And then we have been getting some meal delivery services, you know, where it's healthier options. So once a week we'll defrost this meal and we'll have it. And even just Pete being home with the pandemic, he's doing a lot. He's always helped out so much, but now he has more time to do, you know, if we take turns doing laundry in the day or getting dinner ready or taking Stuart to and from school. So just getting that outside help has really made a difference. Well, or more help from other people.
For sure. I think, you know, those are really two key pieces, really, like managing your expectations and also that feeling of, yeah, not having to do it all by yourself. And getting that help and support, whether it's from your partner or whether it's someone you hire.
Definitely. Yeah. So that's been some things we've come to realize through our transition through perimenopause. And now we'll talk a little bit about what the studies are saying. So in terms of nutrition, I touched on the need for protein, right? So we want to maintain our muscle mass. So you want to aim for that 1.2 grams to 1.5 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight. So if you're, you know, 70 kilograms or about 150 pounds, you times the 70 by 1.2, and that's the minimum amount of protein you want to get. The upper range, you would times it by 1.5. So that's really key. And you came across an interesting point about protein as well, right, Tony?
Yeah, there's was just a new study published last month that looked at getting a certain level of animal protein, and I believe it's 1 gram per kilogram of body weight. And having that intake of protein from an animal source actually has an inverse relationship to all cause mortality. So just what that means is people who get enough of that animal protein have a lower risk of death as they get older. And now this study was done in both men and women. Actually, just a little bit more than half of the study participants were women. So it's great to see that that was the case for us as well, that animal protein actually does support that longevity and lifespan, like I talked about with Andrea Prue a couple of weeks ago. And they actually, the authors really did point out that there was no difference seen when it came to protein from a vegetarian source. So this it can be tricky when we're talking about vegetarian or vegan diets and the quality of protein that you get. And I wonder if that's a piece of it. But again, we absolutely need that protein to support our muscle mass. And that muscle mass is key for our health and our longevity.
Definitely. So yeah, aim to get enough protein. We touched on, you know, you become more carbohydrate resistant, meaning your insulin's going to spike more with eating grains and fruits and sugars and pastries. So you really want to have a meal where you have a good amount of protein, some healthy fat, and good, you know, plant-based sources of carbohydrates people tend to do well with, because it's like the perfect package with a bit of fiber in there. If you're thinking root vegetables, sweet potatoes, yams, squash, that sort of a thing, you're going to have a better balanced blood sugar response to that. And then I know in perimenopause, you know, there is that fluctuating estrogen we talked about, and that estrogen actually inhibits the action of the hunger signals. So recognizing that too, right? So really listening to your body and saying, am I hungry? What's happening? Am I tired? Do I just need to take a rest? Or are you eating because you feel exhausted, but you have to push through in the afternoon, or you need that sugar to get you through the next few hours of work? So really listening to your body, to what it's telling you. And yes, sometimes there's a time and a place where you need that tea or coffee in the afternoon, or, you know, sugary treat. You could make it, you know, a better choice than, you know, maybe the Starbucks, you know, cake pop or whatever, but it's just listening on the deeper level. Okay, maybe I didn't get enough sleep last night, or maybe I'm starting to get burnt out and I need to back off some of these obligations that I'm a part of. So really listening to your body there, and then not, you know, not depriving yourself or forcing yourself to eat a certain way. You know, for me, the intermittent fasting worked until it didn't, and recognizing maybe there's a time and a place for following certain programs, but it's not always the end all be all. And listen to how your body responds to that. And it's actually interesting too, because in perimenopause, there is an increase in eating disorders. And I see so many women exercising harder, eating less, and still not getting the results that they need. So we know, you know, that definitely the protein, looking at slower release carbohydrates, more plant-based carbohydrates from vegetables, getting some more healthy fat, these can all make a difference.
Absolutely. You know, getting enough calories is really key when it comes to supporting your metabolism. And I mean, and typically something that I consider people at least start with is looking at a Mediterranean style diet. Mediterranean diet has a lot of research in terms of supporting cardiovascular health and health overall. And that's where, again, it's that balance of protein, carbohydrate, of fiber, as well as making sure that, yeah, you're getting enough calories during that. It's interesting that you, again, there is that piece of looking at satiety, hunger cues, dealing with mood changes, extra stressors that can happen during perimenopause. I found it really interesting that one study showed that women tend to increase their self-reported alcohol consumption when they're approaching their final menstrual period. So again, it's kind of one of those things about how do you manage your stress? How are you coping? And also looking at, okay, are you reaching for things that are sugary or even alcohol? And is that, you know, even contributing to some of those metabolism issues and weight gain as well?
Definitely. And a sign that you may not be getting enough time for yourself, or you're not filling your cup up, is when, you know, the kids go to bed and you're like, I finally have, you know, an hour to myself. I'm going to have that glass of wine. I'm going to have that, you know, bag of cookies or bag of chips or whatever it is. And, you know, occasionally that's okay. But it's like, okay, we're doing that to fill our cup up. We're not giving ourselves enough time in the day for ourselves, right? So it's looking at, where is that behavior coming from? Does it need to be food or alcohol to kind of treat ourselves or celebrate the end of the day? What else could that be? Because I definitely see so many women complain about, yeah, they just start eating after the kids have gone to bed while they're watching TV and they just can't stop. And part of it too, maybe they're not eating enough in the day as well, whether they're too busy or they're trying to restrict their eating.
Yeah. And something to ask yourself too is how do you feel after that? I mean, sometimes I will, you know, have a glass of wine or some cider when the kids go to bed, or when Frankie goes to bed, thinking like, oh, I'm treating myself. And sometimes it doesn't feel good. Sometimes I don't feel great afterwards. So it's definitely something that I don't do on a regular basis, because in listening to my body, I just really wasn't doing well after that.
Yeah, some people may feel fine after one, you know, the benefits, you may feel like a boost for 20, 30 minutes, but yeah, you can decide if it's worth it. But just being aware, like not doing it just because that's what you always do, but making it a conscious choice of, yes, this is going to help me in the moment. This is what I want to do. So I think that's really important to recognize. And then we do know through studies that there is a steady increase in weight, fat mass, and your BMI during the 8 years prior to menopause. And then the 4 years before your last period up to the 4 years after your last period, that's really accelerated too. And I think women really can, you know, feel this. And we talked about some of the causes there. We definitely want to support your muscle mass with protein. We want to make sure you're limiting the carbohydrates and the alcohol, because alcohol is a carbohydrate too, right? So that's going to contribute to that insulin release. It's still a form of sugar. And then through that estrogen change, you're going to have more of those hunger signals, because they're not inhibited too. So there's a whole host of reasons for this weight gain and change in body composition for sure.
Now, especially because we're talking about body composition, weight gain, and even alcohol consumption, I want to skip ahead. We're going to talk about some of the impact of phytoestrogens. And this is something that I talk a lot about with my perimenopausal patients, but even women of all ages. I'm a big fan of certain phytoestrogens. And I found it really interesting, Lisa, that you had put some information in our notes about a recent study around beer, because beer is the main food source for a very strong phytoestrogen. I'm not even going to attempt to say it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever even said it out loud. I just say phytoestrogen. Yeah,
exactly.
I say xanthohumol. There you go.
Oh, good. You did it.
I did it.
Okay. Lisa,
I just went for it.
High five. High five. And they did a study where they actually looked at perimenopausal symptoms, and they looked at alcoholic beer and non-alcoholic beer. Now, this wasn't like a huge study, but there was, you know, 37 actually postmenopausal women. So they were looking at menopausal symptoms, and they found that both alcoholic and non-alcoholic beer significantly reduced the severity of menopause-related symptoms. And actually, they also found that the effect of this beer was attributed to that non-alcoholic fraction of beer. So, you know, the phytoestrogen piece of the beer. And actually, even a moderate consumption of non-alcoholic beer improved the lipid profile. So, you know, cholesterol balance and triglycerides in women, and decreased blood pressure in postmenopausal women. Amazing.
I know, right? So reach for those non-alcoholic beers, as long as you're okay with gluten. Yeah, they probably have non-alcoholic gluten-free, but that might be asking a lot. I've never looked for that.
I've never looked for that either. Now, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you could find one, because there's definitely more non-alcoholic beers available on the market. Again, it is one of those things that again, some people like the taste of beer, maybe not myself, but for people who like the taste but don't want to have the alcohol, there is that available for you.
I know, it's so fascinating. It was a really interesting study. Tony, I'll pause there for a sec because we're at 32 minutes already. So we can make this a two-parter, right?
We totally can.
Let's do it. Yeah. So we can just say, okay, you know, we talked about the phytoestrogens in beers. We're going to, in the second part of this, because it's such a huge topic, we're going to talk more about other sources of phytoestrogens. We're going to talk about some other supplements and the use of herbs and HRT. Do you want to do that? Because I think it's going to be too much as a whole episode.
We just did
body composition and lipid profile. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm looking, I think that's great.
So we're now at 3 o'clock. So that's like 34 minutes in. So I'll edit this out. So yeah, we just finished that. So I guess, if you want to just mention with the phytoestrogens from other sources, we'll get into part two or something like that. And then, I can talk about, I can actually just say what I just said if you want.
You say what you just said, because it sounded perfectly.
Sure. Yeah. Okay, great. So I'll just get a sip of water. And we can just record the second part now. And even if it's shorter, it's okay, because it's pretty info heavy, right? So we just have to think of a mama must have. Okay, here I go. Yeah,
we can do it.
So we're going to actually make this into a two-part episode, because we just covered a lot of information on weight changes, on beer, you know, on what's really helped us through perimenopause. But in the second part of this, we're going to talk about other sources of phytoestrogens and the benefits that they have through perimenopause, menopause, and even potentially on bone health. We're going to talk about herbs and other supplements that have been studied in perimenopause and menopause. So we'll save that for the next time. And even acupuncture, we'll discuss the benefits too. But I think, Tony, we've given a lot of people a lot to think about. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I know it can be a lot to go through all of the research out there, even though there isn't a ton of research. So let's move over to the next part of our episode, Lisa.
Yeah, I want to hear your super mom moment, Tony.
Well, I thought it'd be a good idea to give you all an update on my previous mama mess up of not being ready for Frankie's advent calendar for December. So I'm happy to report that Frankie's advent calendar was ready for December 1st. It had been kind of creating me a little bit of stress, because, you know, a couple of days before December and it wasn't ready. But it was ready for December 1st. And maybe even the biggest piece of all is I didn't do it all by myself. I had Davin actually help me. He contributed a lot to creating some of the activity cards in the calendar, because it wasn't just all treats. We had some activity cards for skating and swimming and movie night. So he made those up. He helped to fill the little pockets in her advent calendar. He hung it up in her little play area in the living room. We got it done. She loves it. It's fantastic. It's a hit. And I think a great supermom moment for the fact that I got it done and didn't really do it all myself.
Amazing. I love that. And I love that you didn't put in like candies. You actually just did activity cards. So
yes.
Taking the sugar out of it, which can be hard to do.
For
and
sure.
You got Davin to help. I love it.
And I got Davin to help. Yeah, we did put some candies in for the weekend days, so I didn't have to deal with any sugar intake on during the week. I think it's a pretty good balance. So I like that we got it done and we did it together.
Definitely a super mom moment, Tony.
Oh, thanks. Now, Lisa, you're an awesome mom. And I think you have a mama mess up to share with us today.
I do. Like, having, you know, an almost 5-year-old, I feel like we're negotiating a lot of the times to get him out the door, to get him ready for bed. And as much as possible, we try to use the natural consequences method, right? So let's say he's taking a long time to get his snow pants and jacket on, and we're, you know, running a little bit late to get out the door in the morning. We'll say something like, well, Stuart, if you're not helping by getting ready, then you're going to have less time playing your computer games in the morning, or we're not going to be able to use your computer in the morning. And, you know, sometimes that works, but sometimes we reach the end of our rope and the consequences aren't a natural consequence, right? It might be like, okay, if you don't get out the door in the morning, then I'm trying to think of an example, then maybe you won't get to watch a bit of TV at night. Like it's not related to the activity. So he's caught on to this and he's using it against us. So if we're asking him, okay, Stuart, it's time to go upstairs now, he'll say, I'll only go upstairs if you give me, you know, another, or sorry, I'll only go upstairs if you let me watch a bit more TV, or I'll get my snow pants on if you let me have another chocolate. Trying to negotiate with us. I'm like, it's exhausting. Anyway, we'll figure out a strategy for that. We're, you know, bedtime and getting him out the door in the morning has been a little bit challenging, but I was still trying to gamify it, right? So say, let's see how long it takes you today to get ready. And I put a timer on and I see if he can beat his previous days. So sometimes that works.
Perfect. Well, keep us posted. As always, I'm taking notes, Lisa.
So be careful how you negotiate with them because they can bring it right back your way.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
And then, Tony, what's your mama must-have?
Oh, yeah. So previously I'd shared a mama must-have of the documentary, The Business of Birth Control. When I shared this on a previous episode and made it my mama must-have, I hadn't even watched the documentary. I just knew it was going to be an amazing documentary by Abby Epstein and Ricky Lake, who had made The Business of Being Born and Weed the People, two really amazing documentaries. And then this weekend, I got the opportunity to actually watch The Business of Birth Control on a sneak peek online. And it was amazing. Literally, I believe that this documentary should be watched by every single woman out there, not only for ourselves, but for our daughters. Really looking at just some of the things that you need to know about hormonal contraceptives, things that would just really haven't been told to us as women in general, conversations that are not being had between doctors and you know, the women who are on birth control. So I highly recommend, if you have the opportunity to see The Business of Birth Control, take it. And we'll link to the website to find out more info on the movie as well.
I was going to watch it this weekend. I didn't get around to it, but I think they've extended the sneak peek. So I'm going to really try to watch that tonight. And hopefully it's not going to keep me awake, but it might. Maybe I'll watch half of it and then see the other half for during the day. Yeah. But thanks for sharing. I definitely want to check that out.
Yeah. Break it up, Lisa.
Yeah.
Now, what's your mama must have for today?
Yeah, I'm loving. I got my Oura ring. I know you ordered one as well, Tony. So it's Oura for those that aren't familiar with it, and you wear it all the time and it tracks your heart rate variability. So it tells you how you're resilient to stress, how your parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems are interacting. It monitors your sleep and how much REM sleep you're getting and deep sleep and how many hours. It tracks the number of steps that you take. And, you know, if you're doing moderate or intense exercise, it tracks your temperature, and they're going to have a period tracker coming in the new year. So I find it's so fascinating. I kind of was away from all of these data health trackers, but I just disclosed that I have that continuous glucose monitor in my arm, and then I have my Oura ring on my finger. So for the last week, like it's literally just been a week that I've had these on, or almost 2 weeks for the glucose monitor, but I'm finding it so interesting. So I go through phases where I want to collect data through apps, and then sometimes it's just TMI, too much information, but I'm learning so much about what I need to do to optimize my health and my sleep and my heart rate and all of that. So I wonder about all the signaling going on, you know, but they do say it's like lower levels and you can put it on airplane mode, even the ring, but I'm really finding it fascinating. So I think you're going to love it when you get yours, Tony.
I'm so excited, Lisa. That's awesome. Really, again, a great way to kind of see what's happening with your body. And yeah, like you said, it doesn't have to be used all the time, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you can just take it up if you need a break.
That's perfect. Well, thanks so much, everyone, for joining us today. Again, you can find our show notes at our website, perimenopausalmamas.com. You can connect with us on Instagram and on our Facebook group. We'd love for you to subscribe to the podcast, leave a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And you can also check out our link to support us on Patreon. So stay safe and healthy, everyone. Take care.
Take care. Until next time. Bye-bye.